This is Audible.
Hachette Audio presents You'll Never Believe What Happened to Lacey. Crazy stories about racism. Written and read by Amber Ruffin and Lacey Lamar. This book is dedicated to Black mothers and fathers like James and Teresa Ruffin, who teach us how to deal with racism. To Black brothers and sisters like Crystal, Angela, and Jimmy, who provide support. And to Black children like Imani, who hopefully have it easier than we did. And most of all, this book is dedicated to El DeBarge. You are truly the rhythm of the night. Lacey used to have these Black history checks. Each check had a different Black hero on it. MLK, Rosa Parks, Frederick Douglass. So Lacey was at a store chatting with the cashier and they're having fun. After she's all rung up, Lacey hands the young white cashier a check with a picture of Harriet Tubman on it. And the cashier said, "Wow, you have checks with your picture on them?" Y'all, I'm sorry this book peaked so early. That is the funniest story I will ever hear. Harriet Tubman, you guys. Look at their two faces. This story happened years ago, and I still think about it and laugh out loud. Now, this is the audiobook, so what you can't see is this check with Harriet Tubman's picture. And then we've put Lacey's picture in Harriet Tubman's place on the exact same check. They do not look alike. Hi, my sister Lacey is a lightning rod for hilarious racist stories. She's the perfect mix of polite, beautiful, tiny, and Black that makes people think, "I can say whatever I want to this woman." And I guess you can, hey, knock yourself out, but that doesn't mean you won't end up in a book. I am not exaggerating when I say, you won't believe what happened to Lacey, and I'm hard to impress. My name is Amber Ruffin. I grew up with my big sister Lacey, our mom, dad, and two other sisters and one brother in Omaha, Nebraska. I know exactly the type of shenanigans folks will pull on a person of color. My Lord, have I heard some things, but my feeble stories never come close to the hilarity that befalls Lacey on a near daily basis. I moved away from Omaha many years ago, and now I live in New York City where I write comedy. Everyone I work with is stark raving normal. We don't have any crazy bigots, dumb enough to run up, and I'm no one's first Black friend. Now, I'm not saying no one ever says anything crazy to me. I'm still a Black woman in America. It's just that we all know there are consequences for talking to me as if you've lost your mind. So I've forgotten more or less the constant flow of racism one must endure to live in the Midwest and be the only Black person at work. It's an unchecked tsunami of dumb questions and comments. You're expected to walk people through every aspect of Blackness. You become the ambassador of Blackovia. People think it's your job to answer every dumb, "Why can't I?" insert the most nonsense shit you've ever heard. Is it because I'm white? Now, I call this process dragging white people into the light, and it's something I don't do anymore.
This is Lacey. My little sister Amber is spoiled and has forgotten the 1970s-esque social blind spot she's left me in. Don't get me wrong. I'm glad that she's gotten to move away from Omaha to New York, where someone would get fired for out-and-out racism. I love that that really happens. Never seen it, but I love it. Like Santa Claus, I've seen movies about it, heard people talk about it. I understand it's normal for a lot of people, but it would be like having a zebra in your living room for me. I would not believe my eyes.
Twice a week, I get a text from my sister that says, "Can you talk?" It's my favorite because I know I'm about to be transported to a place that exists in real life and fantasy. The place where coworkers put their whole hand in your hair, talk about, "It's fluffy like a dog." Now, I realize that sounds terrible, but it's like watching Dateline. You can't believe it was the girlfriend who killed the husband. It's the edge of reality. Technically, it happens, but it's barely plausible. Excited, I steal away to the elevator banks at work and listen to Lacey tell me a new horror story. It is fantastic. As I stand there, mouth agape, listening to some new fresh hell, I'm always struck by the fact that these stories will only exist in this phone call. Some will go on to become stories once the topic turns to racist people at work one night when Lacey's hanging out with all of her friends, but she'll forget most of them because of the sheer volume. The sheer volume. Now, I understand all of this sounds harsh, but you have to know that this is not a book full of sad stories.
The previous paragraph will be the saddest it will get for a while. Black people hear stories like these so frequently that it takes a lot for it to start to hurt our feelings. We have all been through it, but dare I say, you ain't been through it like Lacey.
Black listeners will hear these stories and feel that really good yet terrible feeling of going through something bad and realizing you're not alone. And not only that, but that someone else has it worse. And hopefully the white listener is going to listen to this, feel sad, think a little about it, feel like an ally, come to a greater understanding of the depth of this type of shit, and maybe walk away with a different point of view of what it's like to be a Black American in the 21st century. Hence this book.
Why? Why would a person do this?
There are a few reasons why I think this book is important. I think it's important for people to speak on what has happened in their lives. When something shitty happens to you and you never say anything about it, it festers. And trying to act like it's not happening is bad for you.
I know, Lacey. You guys, Lacey has the burden of carrying around all this garbage alone. I want to unburden her. I want to wrap my hair in kente cloth, stand on a rock, and shout, "Let us unburden our sister Lacey by gathering to hear her stories, lest they drag her down to the pits of depression." But that would be insane. Slightly less insane, gathering these stories into a book and selling it to strangers in malls and airports throughout the country.
Also, any person who has to live like this needs to hear that there is a second person slogging through this mess. And then they'll realize that there's a lot of people living like this and feel better, then worse for a second, and then better again.
We want to use this book to make sure people understand that when something racist happens to you, you can say it. You can feel however it makes you feel, and you can talk to people about it. You have the right. It can hit you however it hits you at that exact moment. You can express your feelings about it or not, or just tell the story and leave your feelings out, or just say your feelings and leave the story out. It's your world. There are a billion studies about why you should speak positively, meditate, how to handle loss and stuff like that. But when it comes to how to live in a country made to abuse you, who the fuck knows? So do what you feel.
And not to go full hippie on you, but leaving these things unsaid gives them power. Try to unroll your eyes and listen to the rest of this. If you do not take the time out and call bad things that have happened to you bad, they float around your brain, categoryless, and with influence from the type of people who want to penalize you for calling racist things racist. Those events can fall into the okay category.
Shut up, Lacey. And finally, has anyone taken a look at a lifetime of racism? I mean, this isn't every racist story that has happened to her, and she's nowhere near the end of her lifetime, but it's a good chunk of them. Now, some of these stories are old, but a lot of them are post-Obama stories. A lot of folks think things like this don't happen anymore, but in this climate where people are becoming more and more brave with their racism, I think things may get worse before they get better. Just kidding. I don't think things are going to get better. Just kidding about just kidding. I'm team hopeful. But my point is, has anyone ever decided to take a look at one person's buttload of racist stories? What happens when you do? I don't know, but here you go. About the authors. Amber Ruffin was born in Omaha, Nebraska in 19-whatever year is plausible for you but still implies that she is young. She moved to Chicago to pursue a career in improv and laugh all you want, but it worked. She was hired by a theater called Boom Chicago in Amsterdam where she did improv shows for what felt like a billion years. She also did shows in Chicago at the Second City Main Stage. And that's it. That's a complete list of full-time improv jobs you can have in this world. In 2014, Amber became the first Black woman to write for a late-night network talk show in the United States. As of her writing this, she's a writer-performer on Late Night with Seth Meyers and the host of The Amber Ruffin Show on the new NBC streaming service Peacock. But by the time you read this, she'll be king? Lacey Lamar is Amber's big sister. She was born in Omaha, Nebraska, and if you want to know what year, take the year you imagined me being born in and subtract 4 years. Lacey is the middle child in our family, yet somehow the only normal one. After all the less-than-fun jobs she's had over the years, she feels she's finally found a great job as a program director at a good company. Living in Nebraska, Lacey loves the challenge of creating safe spaces for the celebration of nerd-slash-African-American culture. See how we use the word challenge? Polite, huh? Intro! Picture it.
Omaha, Nebraska, 1980 to 2020. This is the setting all these stories take place in. It's not completely backwards, but Omaha is still pretty segregated, so there are places you can go and get stared at. You know what I mean? Like, where no one talks to you, and when they do, it's to ask you if you work here. It's not the most racist place, but it's not the least racist place. Okay, so just like everything, Omaha has a wide range of white people, from regular to look how cool I am with black people to, ew, a black person. It's never a black person's job to make sure these people understand why what they're saying is wrong. It's our job to survive another day as a black person in America. Sounds dramatic, but as you will find out, it can be a tough thing to do. Now, lest I scare you, here is the range of these stories. No one gets hurt. No one dies. Not in this book. This book is not about those things. This book is about the things you're expected to swallow or forget. So, bon appetit. As I've said before, Lacey is a magnet for this behavior because she's small and nice and cute. Another factor is where these stories take place. The vast majority of these stories happen in Lacey's workplaces. When you're at work and someone says something crazy, you gotta walk the tightrope. You don't want to hurt their feelings so badly that they get you fired. Getting a black lady fired from a workplace is so easy, you can do it accidentally. But you also don't want to create an environment where you're a sounding board for people's gross racist thoughts. You're already the person they come to discuss rap. That's enough. I don't know what effect stories like these have on the people they happen to, on the people who hear them, or on the people who need to hear them. When you hear these stories and think, none of these stories are okay, you're right. And when you hear these stories and think, dang, that's hilarious, you're right. It's both. There's going to be a lot of times when you're listening to this book when you think, there is no motivation for this action. It seems like the story is missing a part because people aren't just this nonsensically cruel. But where you see no motivation, you understand racism a little more. It's this weird, unprovoked lashing out, and it never makes any sense. It's why it's so easy for people to believe the police when they beat someone up, because no one would be that cruel just because the person was black. But they are. So as you listen to this book, when you see there's no motivation, know that there is. Racism. If you were reading the print edition of this book, you'd notice throughout the book I capitalize black and leave white lowercase. It's because when I was in history class in 7th grade, I saw a lecture where some black activist, I forget who, said to always capitalize black when talking about African Americans who were descendants of slaves. Now, the thinking was the term African American is a reminder that Africa is a whole continent and we'll never be able to pinpoint exactly where our ancestors were from on it. It's like saying South American. There's a lot of friggin' countries and cultures in South America, and if you can't say which, you might as well say Earthling. They also said African American is kind of like Polish American in that it makes you seem like you chose to come here. Black Americans may be from the same place, but how we got here is very different, and we aren't ashamed of it. So we had to start embracing the whole Black American experience. We have a rich culture to draw from and feel loved by. At some point, each of our family trees turns into a pile of receipts, so we would claim black as descendants of slaves. Does that make sense? Just kidding. I don't care if it does. Anyway, when I saw this on TV, honestly, I didn't feel very strongly about it. I understood where the activist was coming from, though, so I decided to try it out and take their advice and used it in a history paper. The teacher told me I couldn't capitalize black and not white. He insisted that I capitalize neither. I proceeded to capitalize black on every paper I turned in and got 5 points off every time. If you want to share your opinions with me on this, please write down all your thoughts on a paper airplane and throw it out your window. At this point in the print edition of the book, you would see a pretty racist map of Omaha. Get familiar with it because it'll be a part of a lot of these stories. Okay, so what you can't see here is this map of Omaha. Now, North Omaha is black, but it's also very white. South Omaha is very Hispanic, and West Omaha is almost completely white. That's basically all it is. Before you come to the conclusion that Omaha is some small backwoods town, here's a list of cities we are bigger than. New Orleans, Louisiana, Oakland, California, Cleveland, Ohio, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Salt Lake City, Utah, Orlando, Florida, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Omaha is the 44th biggest city in America. There is no excuse for this behavior. I got a million of them. Okay, these are the stories we all have. If you know a black person, odds are this has happened to them. If you are a Black person, remember that? Crazy, huh?
It's a good place for this collection of stories to start. Now, if you listen to this first chapter and think, there is no way this happened, I refuse to believe it, then you may not be able to make it through this book. Let's begin this book with one of the most fun and most frequent racist stories. Being told you look like someone you in no way look like, but is also Black. Sometimes you say, I don't look like that person at all, you cannot see. But sometimes you say, fine, I do look like Michelle Obama. You can't be fighting everybody all the time. They'll have to wait for a more patient Black person to tell them they have lost their mind.
One summer in the mid-90s, I went on a vacation to Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado. It was a fun trip through the mountains, even though there wasn't another Black person in sight. I walk into a lovely store that sells trinkets and tourist stuff. It's pretty darn cute. And what's even better, the lady behind the counter sees me and is happy. This does not happen a lot, period. Much less in the middle of the mountains. So this lady runs up to me, a Black lady, smiling from ear to ear. She is like, yay! Whoopee! And I, being a natural improviser, yell right back, yay! Whoopity-doo! No one's ever been so happy to see me that they exclaim like this before. But this lady has me believing that those people are wrong, and this is the only way I should ever be greeted. The lady runs up to me and says, oh my God, I can't believe you're in my store. I'm thinking, who in the world does she think I am? The lady insists that I take whatever I want on the house. I politely thank her while I suss out the situation. Maybe she is so glad to see a Black person, she wants to give me free stuff. It's possible. You never know what a white person is going to do. She says, I'm your biggest fan. I've loved you since Jumping Jack Flash. That's when I realized this woman thinks I'm Whoopi Goldberg. She was yelling, Whoopi, as in Whoopi Goldberg, not Whoopi, as in yippity-doo. Now, this woman doesn't just think I look like her, which happens to both of us a lot, but thinks I am her. Now I'm having quite a conundrum. It is not right to take T-shirts that are meant for Whoopi Goldberg. But on the other hand, free T-shirts. Who was I to reject this compliment? I love Whoopi Goldberg. I look into the lady's eyes and realize that Whoopi Goldberg being in her store has made her year. It would be wrong not to take 5 T-shirts and leave. So I do. Here's some pictures of people I have been told I look like next to pictures of me trying my best to look like them.
This is an audiobook, so what you can't see are all these pictures of Lacey next to all these celebrities. So there's a picture of Radon Chong, Googler, and next to that is a picture of Lacey. They do not look alike. There's a picture of Condoleezza Rice next to a picture of Lacey. They do not look alike. There's a picture of Whoopi Goldberg next to a picture of Lacey. Quite honestly, they look a little bit alike. There's a picture of Oprah next to a picture of Lacey. They do not look alike. Some no-service stories. Lacey loves Omaha Fashion Week. She goes every year. Omaha Fashion Week is a big deal fashion show and expo where Omaha showcases a lot of its talented designers. It's really fun, and Lacey loves supporting local businesses.
I think it's inspiring to see what my neighbors have come up with. They're right here in Omaha.
Y'all, this nerd loves Omaha and all our events and fundraisers and gatherings. She's a nerd for Omaha events.
So do you.
Oh my God, I do. We're both nerds. One year, Lacey went with friends, and the whole show was fun, but she became fixated on one specific designer. Her dresses were amazing. Lacey started to think, Amber needs one of these for the Emmys. I love to go every year to lose. And at the end of the show, you can meet the designers and ask how to purchase different pieces. There's a long line to wait in to meet this designer. Lacey doesn't care. She's mesmerized by glamour. She waits the 15 minutes in line to talk to her, and when she gets to the front, she meets her associate. Lacey asks if she can meet the designer who's standing a few feet away. The associate says to Lacey, her pieces are really expensive. Now, in no way was that an answer to her question. And a few things could be happening here. Possibility number one, this could be your traditional white person who thinks Black people spend too much on stuff we can't afford. It feels good for them to tell Black people they can't afford things because treating grown Black men and women like children makes them feel superior. Or possibility number two, this could be that thing where white people don't want to be associated with you because it would make people think less of them. Like, Maybe they want to be known as this very bougie brand, and they think the black people wearing their clothes will do the opposite. Or possibility number three, we found a mean old bitch who was smack dab in the middle of being a mean old bitch. Possibility number four, they're just looking out for you. Just kidding. I put that there so that you would know that that category is exactly possibility number one. Doesn't matter what's going on here. She's not the designer. Lacey ignores her. She even has pity for the designer for having an asshole of an assistant. Surely this designer whose clothes spoke to Lacey's soul would be different. Lacey walks right up to the designer and says, "Hello, are you the designer?" And without missing a beat, this woman says, "These are exclusive, one-of-a-kind runway pieces, and they're very expensive." Well, what do you fucking know? All this while, Lacey thought she was in Omaha. Turns out, she had walked into an Armani fashion show. So sorry, Donatella Versace. She thought she was supporting her community. Whoops. Excuse me, Gucci. I thought this was the kind of fashion show open to the public where people stand in line and get to talk to the designer. Sorry for wanting to tell you you're great and purchase your dresses. That's Omaha. So Lacey loudly replies, "Wow, you are really rude. Is this how you talk to black people? Well, thanks, because your attitude just saved me." She looks at the price tag. $575? $575. This only costs $575? Wow, I thought this was supposed to be a runway piece. Thank goodness I didn't buy this. I could have really embarrassed myself. There's this very insane black thing where people out loud will assume you have no money by just looking at you, especially if you ask how much something costs. Sometimes when you ask, "How much is this?" people hear, "Do I have any business buying it?" It makes you want to scream. Now, no one is asking you to look at them and guess if they can afford it. People just want to know the friggin' price. Do white people not ask what things cost? Ha ha ha, but also for real, do they? Mom and Angie recently went to the grocery store together, and at this point early in the book, I just want to say I am struck by how many of these stories happen after we sold this book. I mean, there were more than enough stories before we sold the book, but dang, I'm now realizing that like 10% of these stories are brand spanking new. Okay, all I'm saying is this is a lot. All right, so Mommy and Angie, they thought they might make lobster for the two of them. No one else in the family really likes it. In the fish department, they asked the guy how much lobster tails are, and the great lobster keeper said, "They're really expensive." And it's like, I didn't ask if you could afford a lobster tail. I asked how much they are. This shit is maddening. Mom mean mugged this guy and growled, "I'll take four." Instantly, the guy knew what he had done. They watched as he silently packed up the four tails. The two of them ate lobster like six different ways. Now, are we rich? No. Can we afford to buy two friggin' lobster tails at a dang supermarket one time? Yeah, but now that you've acted a fool, we gotta eat four. Once Lacey went to a car dealership to buy a car, she was prepared to be harassed, like car dealers do, to constantly be followed around. So she walked in and there were no customers. So everyone was really into helping her, not exactly what she wanted.
Actually, I kind of love going to car dealerships because it is one of the few places where, even though you're black, people fall all over themselves to help you.
It's probably what being white is like.
It's fun, but I wouldn't want that all the time.
Too much.
Can you imagine getting that service everywhere you went? Why, constantly being treated like you're really important would turn you into a
white woman?
Did we just figure out why Karen's Karen?
Yes, we did. Anyway, Lacey immediately found the exact car she wanted, so there was nothing to do but search their inventory to compare each model to see which color and options were available. She goes into the office with one of the salesmen, and slowly the place starts to get customers. There's one customer for each salesman. Lucky! As Lacey sits in the office with her salesman, he's putting options into his computer to see which car has what she wants. This guy is moving kind of slow, and while Lacey doesn't mind, this guy's boss is pacing outside. He is so annoyed, and Lacey sees why. There's an additional customer who's not being helped. Now, instead of this man helping the additional customer himself, he wants this guy to do it for some reason. His pacing is making Lacey's salesman nervous. He says, "Let me ask my boss how to look this up," and goes to talk to the pacing guy. Now, the pacing guy points to the new customers, and Lacey's salesman goes to help them. Now there are three new customers waiting to be helped. The boss comes into the office and says to Lacey, "I don't think we have what you're looking for." Y'all,
A car salesman had a sure thing and chose not to make a sale. He would rather roll the dice with these people who just walked in than sell a car to this woman with her fucking checkbook out. This is what Lacey gets for walking in there worried that she would get too much help. Too much help. I honestly can't imagine. Omaha has a giant furniture store. This place is huge. It's like a couple of blocks big. It's so big and it has so many employees that you never know what kind of service you're going to get. The whole shtick of this place is that it was owned by a super cute little old lady. She would appear in commercials and it was adorable. Once, a million years ago, my parents bought a bedroom set from the showroom. They noticed the bedroom set on the showroom floor was broken. They were assured that the one that would be delivered to their house would be perfect, but they delivered the broken one and it fell apart. So my parents drove to this store to talk to someone about it. When they get there, absolutely no one will talk to them. They demand to see the boss, and for some reason, they let them. Mom and Dad walk into the office of the woman who owns the place, the real-life sweet little old lady from all the commercials. She's at her desk doing some work, and my parents walk in and say, "Hello, we bought a bedroom set, and it was delivered, and it completely fell to pieces." The sweet little old lady looks up from her work at my two black parents and, without saying a word, waves them away. They leave, and nothing gets fixed. Anywho, Lacey's at this furniture store. It's literally decades later, so I'm sure it's gotten better. She sees a coffee table she's in love with. She looks for a price tag, and there is none. She finds an employee and asks how much the coffee table is. Wouldn't you know it, this bitch says, "Expensive," and walks away. I mean, we're all on Lacey's side here, but that is a straight-up hilarious thing to say.
Amber!
It is, though!
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Agree to both think it's funny and hate it?
Agreed.
Lacey is hot. She looks for a manager, finds one, and tells him what happened. The manager, completely missing the point, says, "I'll look it up for you." Fine, she's mad, but also, how much is this coffee table? Why is this so hard? The manager finds the price and looks up from the screen and says, "Wow, it is expensive." Now Lacey is fucking livid. She yells, "Ring it up!" Silently, the manager does. You guys. The table was $200. That's not what expensive is, not for a coffee table. Also, again, don't you want to sell these? Tell me I'm getting a great deal, you friggin' idiot. It has to be said that we have all gone to this furniture store before and since and were treated perfectly. It was an anomaly that Lacey found two dum-dums in a row. Maybe my favorite story about this is once Lacey's best friend Laura asked how much a Rolex was. And the lady who worked at the fancy watch store said, "I'm sorry, it's really expensive." So Laura replied, "Bitch, I'll take two." And she got two. I would bet this next story is one every black woman in America has. Okay, once Lacey was walking through a department store in a mall, she hears music and sees lights and notices a big crowd over by the makeup counter. They're doing makeovers and there's a fashion show. Fun! Lacey watches one makeup artist doing a great job. She gives her customer this crazy eye makeup, and Lacey is in love. She's determined to get that look. She doesn't care how long she has to wait in line. She walks up to the makeup artist and says, "I love this lady's eye makeup. How long would it take for you to do mine?" The lady looks at Lacey with full confidence and says, "It would take a while, but I would love to do that for you." "Cool!" Lacey waits in line while she does other people's makeup. The lady is doing an excellent job. Lacey's the only black person in line, but that can't be a problem. The lady was so nice and super confident. When it's finally Lacey's turn, she sits in the chair and the makeup artist says, "Close your eyes." Lacey assumes she's starting on her eye makeup, but she feels her applying foundation. No matter their confidence, it's always a toss-up with foundation. More often than not, lines of makeup simply don't have your color, or the makeup artist doesn't know how to find it, or both. Not what Lacey asked for, and also not necessary. Lacey rarely leaves the house without a full face, but whatever, it'll be fine. Lacey opens her eyes after the foundation is applied, and the first thing she sees is a white man standing across the way. He's looking at her the same way you would look at someone who is being hecked into a million pieces. This man is horrified. It's the same look that was on your face when you were watching the movie Alien and saw that alien burst out of that guy's chest. It's just makeup, but this man looks terribly concerned. Lacey doesn't know him, but his face said it all. Something was very wrong. Before she closed her eyes for the makeup lady to apply the eyeshadow, the man looked right at Lacey and shook his head no. Lacey knew to be scared. It's too late now. In for a penny, in for a pound. As she's applying the eyeshadow, she's saying things like, "It won't look exactly the same as the other lady because of the difference in your skin tones." Lacey responds, "Yep." She can feel her applying a thick layer of eyeshadow from her eyelashes all the way up to her eyebrow. Whatever she's doing, Lacey can feel that it is wrong. She's scared. When it's over, she hands Lacey the mirror. Lacey has never been so mortified in her life. The white guy is still there, and they lock eyes. He is very sad in his heart, but he musters a "hang in there, champ" kind of smile. Lacey is in whiteface. Her foundation is 5 shades too light. Just because you use the darkest foundation you have doesn't mean it's dark enough. By the way, this is an ever-present struggle. To this day, some makeup lines you just can't use.
She used a color called white person in a tanning booth.
Not only was Lacey now a white woman, but her poor eyeshadow. She did not come close to making her eyes look like that lady. Lacey just had a thick square of black eyeshadow on each eye. No lipstick, no blush, just a ghost with black eyes. Lacey may not be the best at makeup, but this she could have done herself. When Lacey told the artist the foundation wasn't dark enough, she explained it was the darkest she had. As Lacey walked away, she was stopped by a makeup artist in a different booth who grabbed her and said, "We need to fix this." They laughed as she cleaned Lacey's face up. The makeup artist said, "I've never seen anything like this before." "Lacey, I'm a magnet for this stuff." Luckily, Lacey recreated the look just for us. Okay, so there is a picture of Lacey with a friggin' white face and black eyes, and she looks pretty friggin' sad. Beware who you let do your makeup. You could end up haunting them all like I do. Your name may be on the list, but because of your face, I'll never check. Lacey loves going to Omaha events. It's a fun chance to get dressed up, have a good time, and donate to a good cause. Lacey has a good friend who's often able to put her on the list, but almost every single time she goes, it's the same. She walks up to the ticket table, tells them her name, they pretend to look, and they tell her there is no ticket waiting for her, and her name is not on the list. But it is. It always is. She wouldn't be coming up to them if it wasn't. Ice-T was in Omaha headlining a fundraiser for a children's home. They thought Lacey was not on the list because tickets were expensive. She was on the list. Lacey went to a healthcare seminar, not a fancy fundraiser, a healthcare seminar. And when she gave her name to the woman, without looking down, she said, "Are you in the right place? This is a healthcare seminar." She was on the list. At a fundraiser for Girl Scouts, the ticket person gave her such a hard time that she almost didn't get in. They went back and forth for a while. Lacey had to call her friend over to help her. She was on the list. She got in, and right inside the door, there were a few racks to hang your coats. And as she hung her coat up, a line formed behind her. People thought she was the coat check girl. If she were smart, she would have stayed, taken coats, and made a few dollars. Instead, she told them she was not the coat check girl. White guys trying their best. Dating apps are fun, as long as it's your sister doing the dating and getting the insane messages from strangers and sending you screenshots of them. While you're on a dating app, anyone can send you messages, even the white guys who shouldn't be. Here's a little section of the book about that very phenomenon. Every black person has been hit on by someone who makes it all about race. Speaking of all about race, this book. Okay, so imagine your name is Thor. Your parents were hippies, that's why they chose the name, that's not the point. Imagine how many times someone has learned your name and immediately made jokes about you being a god or lightning or thunder or hammers. By the time you're 10, you've heard it all. That's kind of what it's like being black. That and constant oppression. A white person thinks of a black joke and immediately tells you. They think the situation you're in together is special. It's not. They think they can come up with a black joke you haven't heard some iteration of before. They cannot. They think it shows that they're comfortable with your blackness. Nope. They think it's fun for anyone involved. Big juicy no. Even when I was 8, the last time I heard a new black joke for the first time, it wasn't fun. It never has been. It just reminds me that my being black is on your mind when you see me. This isn't about how a black joke from a black person can be affirming and fun and familiar and insightful. This is about how a black joke from a white person is always exactly none of those things. This is the audiobook, so what you can't see is there's a screenshot of each of these exchanges. Okay, And in each of these exchanges, there's a picture of the guy, and his face is covered so as not to embarrass him and his, you know, probably wife. Okay, so the guy says, "Yeah, truth is, I'd love to chat with you, and I have no game, so here's to maybe you throw me a bone and chat with me for a bit." So Lacey replies, "I'm going to give you a bit of advice. You can take it or leave it. Before talking to an African-American person on this site, take down your Afro wig picture. I don't even want to know why you had them on or how you thought this was a good idea. I don't say it with hate. It's just a really bad picture, and it sends the wrong message." Okay, so this man has a picture of him and some kid wearing Afro wigs together. We will never know why. We will never know what they are doing or who they were pretending to be. We will never know if they put on an Afro wig and shouted, "Look, I look ridiculous in this hair," or "This beautiful hair fills me with respect for the Black community." It's just information we don't have. What we do know is this took two perfectly good Afro wigs away from someone who could have really rocked them. The next picture is this exchange. The guy says, "Okay, I went to Cambridge and have a PhD, really. I try to keep that a secret as I want a wife, LOL. Lacey replies, "Why would that keep you from getting a wife?" He replies, "All my friends are married. I don't know. It seems to me that Black women want a lowlife as a man." This all seems fine until the last line, "Black women want a lowlife as a man." Friggin' shock of the century right there. You see, I'm a Black woman, and on my list of must-haves in a guy, you will not find "hates work, loves to stab." I also know a lot of other Black women who feel the same. But hey, maybe he knows something I don't. Okay, so this next image is a guy in front of a Confederate flag, and he goes, "Hello, beautiful." And Lacey replies, "You do realize you have two pictures with a Confederate flag on them? Please look up what that history means to Black people, and you should probably take it off your profile." And he replies, "Okay, I'll do that. Sorry. So does this mean you don't want to meet up and hang out?" Here's one of my favorites. This man thinks that deleting pictures of a Confederate flag hanging in his house is going to make Lacey see him as someone she wants to get to know. Sure, he took the pictures down, but are these flags still hanging in his house? Was that even his house? These are questions no one wants answered. Can you imagine? Well, he did have a Confederate flag in his profile pictures, but when he took it down, I knew he was the one for me. This next screenshot, the guy goes, "Hello. I bet that's some sweet chocolate." And Lacey replies, "Yuck, awful pickup line, just be yourself. Black women are sick of those stupid-ass chocolate comments. How about introducing yourself and saying your interests? Wow, what a crazy idea." What I have to say about that exchange is, oldest pickup line, trite as it can be, super top of mind, say chocolate one more time, I'll go on a killing spree. So in this next image, Lacey says, "I'm drinking red wine tonight. I still have cab." And he goes, "Ha, I remember it. Didn't know you had a preference. I can't drink white to save my life. I guess I've always preferred darker features, even with wine. I guess I've always preferred darker features, even with wine. Blarf." This next picture, the guy says, "For starter, you are absolutely amazing. I have something to ask you. It's pretty upfront. I was wondering if by chance you were into white men? I've never had the opportunity to have me a taste of a Black woman, and for over a year now, I've had this fascination and unstoppable urge to have me some chocolate. I know I'm older than you, but I promise I can keep up with your young, sexy ass. And who knows, you might even enjoy it yourself. I need to be broken. You could be my first. And honestly, with it being my first time, I'd like it to be a thin, sexy, young Black woman like yourself." This book isn't supposed to be rated R, but let me just say, what? How is this man's hitting on a person basically saying, "You can have sex with me and I'm not going to be particularly good at it and you can do all the work"? This is the message that made Lacey give up completely. As you can see, she didn't have the energy to respond. She just had to walk away. Like we will now from this section.
The Tale of Pocahontas.
Halloween is that special time of year where every Black person decides whether or not they're going to have a conversation with white people about dressing up as other ethnicities. For whatever reason, call it feeling generous or having a short-term memory,
Lacey is talking to a coworker about how it's not okay to dress up as other races for Halloween. This coworker cannot stand it. She can understand why blackface is wrong, small victories, but she cannot understand why she shouldn't dress up as other ethnicities, having the ethnicity itself be the costume. So this lady starts naming different costumes. Certain Lacey will tell her one is okay. Indian chief? No, and you shouldn't be saying Indian chief. China doll? Not exactly sure what you mean by that, but if you mean dressing up in traditional Chinese clothes and calling yourself a doll, no.
Pocahontas?
What?
The Indian chief, Pocahontas.
Everything is wrong with what you just said. Please try to get used to never referring to America's indigenous people as Indians. And no, definitely not. That is the worst. No Pocahontas. All of these are examples of cultural appropriation. It's not okay in your day-to-day life, and just because it's Halloween doesn't make it okay then. I'm honestly shocked you can't see it's offensive. The lady looks down at the table, gives it a good think. She's taken in a lot of information. Maybe she just needs time. There's this long pause before the lady says, "Even Pocahontas?" This lady is saddened. Lacey has ruined her day, but she's already opened up this can of worms, so she might as well see how far she can fling them. So the lady calls a coworker, Roxanne, in the room. Roxanne is white, but Lacey knows some of her friends are activists in the community. This lady is about to get schooled. She explains to Roxanne that all of this is an overreaction. Lacey says people aren't supposed to dress up as other ethnicities, not even on Halloween. So Roxanne tries to make this lady see things from Lacey's point of view. It does not work.
I just don't see why it's so bad.
Roxanne has had enough of this lady. She simply says, I can see why that's offensive, and I can also see why you won't change your mind. Big fucking help. Get the fuck out of here, Roxanne. Lacey said that to Roxanne using her eyes. Then, using her mouth, she said to the lady, listen, it's not my job to tell people what is racist. Dressing up as different ethnicities is cultural appropriation, whether you know it is or not. Lacey now sees this woman is on the verge of a freaking breakdown.
So, you're telling me it's wrong if my child dresses up as Pocahontas for Halloween?
There we go. We found it. This woman's problem was that she dressed her child up as Pocahontas for Halloween and didn't want to feel guilty about it. Too bad. Lacey tells her, have you read the true story of Pocahontas? If you did, you wouldn't want your baby to dress like her. The Disney version is not how it went down.
But celebrating Indian chiefs is a nice thing to do.
Please stop saying Indian chiefs. There's a long pause. It had been a good 10 minutes of yapping back and forth. Yards had been gained and lost. But Lacey had made some good points without the help of the ever useless, middle of the roading, more harm than gooding of stupid Roxanne. The lady looked up at Lacey with genuine sorrow in her eyes and said,
I think I get it. Is it okay if I dress up my child as a Native American?
Lacey gave all the way up in many different ways that day.
Amber and I texted back and forth about this all day. Amber replied, sure, she can dress her child up as Pocahontas, but not if you ever want her to run for office.
Lacey's magic trick! Lacey once had a retail job at a high-end boutique. Because it was a bunch of rich people day in, day out, it was not uncommon to hear someone say something insane. Bosses, coworkers, and most of all, customers. On this particular day, an older white man walked in and Lacey greeted him. They talked about how he was enjoying his day. He then asked Lacey how she was, and as she was talking, a stunned look came over his face. Lacey thinks to herself, you know what? This old man is right. I'm an enthralling storyteller. More people should react like this when I speak. Mid-reply, this old man cuts her off stunned. He says, wow, your diction is perfect. It figures that an ounce of confidence would be blown into oblivion. Where are you from? I'm from right here in Omaha, sir. Wow. I've just never heard a black person speak as well as you. Now, this man is old as time, and Lacey is at work. This comment is going to have to slide. As Lacey hurries away from him to leave him alone to let him shop, his wife walks by the store. He shouts to her, come in here, you need to hear this. He motions to his wife to come in the store so that she can hear Lacey talk. I'm sorry, I misspoke. He motions to his wife to come in the store so that Lacey, the carnival attraction, could impress some relic by sounding different than the two black people he once talked to in 1948. Lacey did not want to participate in this. She goes, I need to make an important phone call. She walks away. The man and his wife stay there and watch her, waiting for her to come back and wow them.
So Lacey picks up the phone and calls herself. As they watch her, she proceeds to leave herself the longest message. She gives a few addresses, checks up on the status of several accounts, and receives bad news about a loved one. These people are still there. Lacey babbles on, and finally, they leave. Those two old people were probably shocked she figured out how to use the phone.
Getting followed around by JCPenney Security, a retrospective. There's Tom and Jerry, Sonic and Robotnik, Sherlock and Moriarty, and Lacey and JCPenney.
Let me tell you a Ruffin family classic. Okay, so we're having a day at the mall, and it's very fun. I'm walking around with Lacey and Mom and our brother Jimmy, shopping for a swimsuit to wear on vacation. I'm a kid, and Lacey's an old teenager. We're in JCPenney. Now, we're not going to go blasting brand names all over the place. That's not what this is about. But if you've been followed around by loss prevention in a particular store enough to make it a whole part of a book, I think it's okay. They're so famous in my family that we changed their old jingle from JCPenney, doing it right, to JCPenney, up against the wall and spread 'em. Now, to be clear, these few times are a fraction of the times we were followed around in the store. So you guys, this is an audiobook. What you can't see is there's a graph that says places we get followed and the number of times it has happened. So in first place is unnamed national drugstore with 17. JCPenney comes in second place with 11. Sears comes in at 5. Dillard's has 4. And TJ Maxx has 0. No one has ever looked twice at me in a TJ Maxx. Now, I don't shoplift, but I could have robbed them blind. And yes, the most is National Drugstore, but that's a whole different thing. There isn't a black person alive who wasn't followed around in that store. Like, JCPenney may be a special Ruffin thing, but drugstore is all of us. Ooh, quick story within a story. Our sister Angie was so fed up with getting followed around that drugstore that her junior high school friends would go there with their one white friend. They'd enter separately, and the black girls would go up and down a lot of the aisles and be followed around by security all throughout the store. Meanwhile, the white friend would come in, unnoticed, and take a ton of stuff. She learned how to make racism work for you. Trademark. Notice how we don't use their name, but do use JCPenney's name? That's how bad they were. So, we're in the girls' section at JC fucking Penny as Mom is finishing up with Jimmy in the boys' section. We are looking at swimsuits when Lacey is approached by a guy who looks like a teenager with a shopping bag, a long ponytail, tan polo with khakis, and a walkie-talkie on his belt. He comes up to Lacey and is like, JCPenney Security, come with me. Now, I'm friggin' terrified. Mom isn't there, and this man is trying to get us to go with him to a second location. And I've evolved since, but the first thought of 10-year-old me when I see this guy is, he's a white man with a ponytail. He's gonna kill us. Now, at this point, Lacey has not tried on a single thing. She is in a spaghetti strap dress and is carrying a tiny purse. She hands him the purse and says, I haven't stolen anything. Here, look for yourself. He says, no, you need to come with me. Ah, the joys of your first time being stopped by loss prevention. It's how you know you've become a woman, a black woman. Lacey's being a shoplifter comes as a surprise to me because I know her and she would rather lose an eye than break the rules. And not only do neither of us have the ability to shoplift, but if Mom ever thought we were shoplifting, we would have to straight up find a new family. She would explain that her love for you was purely biological at this point and throw you into the sea. If you made it to shore safely, you could live, but not with her. It's at this point that Mom walks up and things get really fun. Quick few facts about my mommy. She skipped second grade and seventh grade because she has a bad case of the smarts. If you think you could win an argument with her, you must be insane. And lastly, she isn't fond of people messing with her children. Mom loudly goes, what's going on? And grabs Ponytail by the arm. At this point, our genius brother Jimmy takes the keys to the van and goes, I'll be in the car. He knew what was coming. Lacey told Mom, this guy thinks I stole something and he wants me to go with him. Mom says, that's not happening. The guy goes, your daughter was shoplifting. We saw her on the security cameras. Mom goes, oh, you watched her shoplift? I'd love to see that footage as I've been with her all day.
We can't show that to you.
I bet you can't. Do you have any proof she was shoplifting?
The dress she's wearing still has a tag on it.
So you didn't see her shoplifting at all. You saw the dress she is wearing still had a tag on it.
You saw a white price tag on the inside of a white dress on security footage.
You must have state-of-the-art cameras.
It's in this exact moment that he realizes he's been tripped up in his own words. At this point, shoppers have started to gather. This is before Worldstar and social media. The only way to catch a glimpse of real humiliation was to just so happen to be there. And these folks were lucky. They got to watch a real-life shoplifter get caught. Lacey's embarrassed to death and convinces mom to let her go with them so this doesn't escalate any further. We follow Ponytail to the shoe department. He knocks a special secret knock on what I would have assumed was a wall. It swings open, and Lacey and this guy go inside. Inside, there's a bunch of fools looking at security camera feeds. Lacey walks in, and they ask her to turn around and lift up her hair. Why? I'm not getting undressed. There's not much that can fit under this dress. He explains, no, the employee at the register saw a tag. Lacey turns around, and there is a small piece of plastic that you would see on a new item still attached to her dress. One of the men says, it's not our tag. Lacey replies, you humiliated me and marched me through your department store over a piece of plastic? I'm going to need your names. They all refuse to tell her any names and send Lacey out of the room back to us. When Lacey comes out, she tells Mom she was unable to get their names. Mom shouts to their secret door, reminding them they are terrible at their jobs. Now to us, she's defending Lacey's honor. To passers-by, she's yelling at a wall. The best part of it was, when he went back into the room, he knocked a special knock and slid into the office. Mom, while yelling, knocked the exact special knock and shouted, I know your little secret knock, you're not slick. To this day, I think that phrase every time I knock on a door. Ooh, audiobook bonus. This is what the secret knock was. Lacey looked into suing them and was told by a lawyer that since she went with him willingly to look at the tag, not much could be done. He told her, if something like that happens again, just walk away. It was really important for us to see Mom handle this situation this way. I think a lot of people think that there's no way they can protest how they're being treated, but this was how I learned you can. And again, I'll do whatever I want to do whenever I want to do it, but it's nice to know that if I feel like it, I can really show the fuck out, and that's okay too. I have options. After that incident, Lacey would see Ponytail every single time she was there. He would follow her around whenever she was in the store, and Lacey would say, I see you. I see what you're doing. He must stop every black person who comes in there, so he doesn't remember Lacey, but Lacey remembers him because in order to go in the store, she has to consider if she can stand being followed around or not. He would essentially harass her. So almost a year to the day later, Lacey is seeing The Lion King at the same mall. The movie theater was right next to JCPenney, so it goes JCPenney, mall bathrooms, movie theater, exit to the mall. Lacey and her boyfriend are talking about how much fun they just had. He decides to go to the bathroom. Lacey waits for him right outside. The movie had just ended, and the whole theater full of people had emptied out, and everyone was walking to the exit. As Lacey's standing there waiting, she hears someone yell,
JCPenney security, ma'am, come with me.
Now, since Lacey's many run-ins with them, everyone she knows teases her by yelling, stop,
JCPenney security,
to her while in public. It's funny. So when she's in the mall surrounded by people, she assumes that she's being yelled at by a friend of ours. She feels a hand grab her arm, and a voice says,
where are those bags you just had?
Wow, whichever friend of hers this is really committed. She turns around, and it's Ponytail! Well, you know what they say. When you find a job you stink at, do it until you ruin lives. Somehow, in the sea of people, he found her and accused her of stealing. Terrible as it is, it's nice to know you're someone's favorite. Looking for shoplifters, settling for Lacey, her turning out to be innocent, and then starting all over again.
It's the circle of life.
So she pulls out of his grip and says, this is not happening again. Ponytail really begins to make a scene here in the mall in the middle of the sea of people.
Don't go anywhere. We're taking you in.
Lacey calmly walks into the men's bathroom to get her boyfriend. She doesn't care. It's time to go. Ponytail yells, stop, come back here. Her boyfriend is at the urinal, and Lacey walks into the bathroom yelling, JCP did it again. This guy just grabbed my arm and accused me of stealing. Boyfriend finishes peeing, and they come out of the restroom.
But you weren't even in JCPenney today.
Ponytail is trying to block the restroom exit while yelling into a walkie-talkie,
yep, I have it right here. Hurry up.
They push past him and start walking to the exit. This is what the lawyer told them to do. As they make their way to the exit, two more security guys show up.
Ponytail points at Lacey and says, "She's right there." At this point, people have stopped leaving the mall and are crowded around Lacey, her boyfriend, and the now three security guards. They don't stop walking to the exit. Security is closing in. Boyfriend makes sure to yell, "You better not touch her." And as they close in on the exit, three security guards block their path. They're going to grab him. Here we go. Right before they do, a fourth security guard runs up to them and says to his colleagues, "What are you doing? That's not her." The rest of them, without apology, just turn and walk away. Not a word. There's a huge crowd watching and they say nothing. Lacey is pissed. All of that humiliation for no reason at all. She says, "That's it? You guys are going to stalk me, chase me, accuse me of stealing, and then just walk away? I need to speak to a supervisor." She follows them into JCPenney. They're far ahead, but she can see them leading a girl with her hands cuffed behind her. They found the culprit, and you will never believe what she looks like. She's Hispanic, 200 pounds, and has mustard yellow bell bottoms on. Lacey had on a summer dress. "You couldn't find a pair of mustard yellow bell bottoms? That's all you had to say." If you have ever seen mustard yellow bell bottoms, you friggin' remember that shit. These idiots can't even say yellow pants? It's like the description they gave was girl, and it should have been girl riding a unicorn. At this time, mall security comes up and says, "It's best if you leave." Even though they took nothing, they still got kicked out of the mall. Infuriatingly believable. They walk out of the mall entrance, turn the corner, and walk right back in the JCPenney entrance. They think they've taken this girl to a secret room, but it's no secret to Lacey. Lacey marches right down to the shoe department and knocks the secret knock on the secret door that looks like a wall. The very knock we've been doing and laughing about for the past year. As soon as she does, the door swings all the way open. She sees the entire security staff sitting there. Everyone turns to look at her, a-frigging gassed. The shocked look on their faces was priceless. Lacey launches into her tirade. "Do you know how I know this door is here? Do you know how I know your little secret knock? It's because you bag of assholes did this to me last year. You spend all your days in this cave finding people to harass, and I know that's what you're doing, because if you were concerned with stopping theft, I wouldn't have had this many run-ins with you after never having stolen in my entire life. It has to be on purpose, because you couldn't be this bad at your jobs. If you're going to continue to conduct yourselves like JCPenney is the Wild West, I'm going to need some names." Everyone refused to give their name except the supervisor. This time, the good lawyer was unavailable, so Lacey ended up with a horrible lawyer. JCP admitted no wrongdoing and offered a $50 gift certificate. The opportunity to shop and be watched like a hawk by a bunch of cave dwellers? Sigh. There was once a news piece about how a lady who was stopped and searched in a store in front of everyone got $1 million. Doing the math, I think they owe Lacey $50 billion. The point of these stories is, JCPenney had some of the best sales in all of retail. It is so good. We know this is going to happen, and we still go. I can remember being followed around in more than one JCPenney. Their clearance is like Kohl's level good. I would do almost anything for a $4 shirt. And before you say you shouldn't give them your business, let me just say $4 shirts. I find this hard to believe. This is a collection of stories that Lacey can tell her friends or people who know her well. They are certainly not impossible to believe, but they do sound like a fun lie. This shit would not fly with strangers. You would think she's lying. She's not. We are going to move a little more into the stories where there is a real disconnect. A lot of these stories will highlight what is likely to happen to you when you're the only Black person someone has come in contact with.
And as you listen to this book, you should know my life is great. Aside from my shitty jobs, I have a happy life with great friends and a great family. It's just that every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, someone says something insane to me.
You're wrong about the Black experience. Let me, a white, tell you about it. So, there's this thing you may or may not be aware of. When people who don't normally talk to Black people end up talking to Black people, they usually do one of three things. Talk to you about Black stuff, which is anything from actual Black stuff to, "I like Savion Glover, do you?" Or they tell you about a Black person they know. "I have this friend Marcus who..."
Lots of times they talk to you like that because it feels good to have had a good interaction with a black person. It makes them feel like they're not racist. Whatever the reason is, they seem to enjoy it. But lastly, there's the kind of person in this category who meets a black person and is immediately mad and rude. Never in front of another white person who isn't their child or wife, but under the right circumstances, these people will talk to you like it's 1909. I have a theory about why this happens. Now, I don't know if this is true or not, but I think the last category of white person sees black people shopping at the same store, having a mutual friend, or just sharing a sidewalk, and it makes them realize that we are the same. And once they lose their perceived upper hand, they fucking freak out. Humans need joy to live, and most people's joy comes from friends and family or from hobbies and work, but some people's joy comes from the idea that they are superior. So my living a life that is better than theirs destroys their joy. They rage against the idea that they ain't shit. It's like if someone walked up to me and said, "You can't pull off high-waisted slacks and a crop top," it would change my very idea of myself. And I would hurt their feelings so bad, I would wreck them. I would simply wreck them, and they would deserve it. We say all that to say, sometimes people see a black person and panic and just say the first thing that comes to mind. Lacey had just met a white coworker, and she was like, "Why is she talking to me?" Then she told her that she had a black fiance, and Lacey was like, "Oh, that's why she's talking to me." She said she was jealous of our skin because it was always so smooth and soft. "I just love the feel of your skin. I constantly have to apply lotion to my skin or it just gets so dry." Now, where did she learn that black people's skin comes naturally moisturized? Does she not know the opposite is the stereotype? Has she never heard of ashiness? Or did she, and this is the most likely, see two black people who had a lot of cocoa butter on and assume it was natural? Whatever the reason, it's cool that she thinks that. When she said this, Lacey just let her think it. We encourage everyone to start fun black stereotypes. Trademark. At this same job, Lacey was talking to a coworker and mentioned how someone had mistaken her for a director that worked in another building. Of course they mistook her for her. She was the only other black lady at work. Luckily, Lacey was there first, because one of us is getting called the other one's name. You may not know this, but in many cases, nothing is harder than adding the name of a second black person to a white person's mind. I was the second black actress at my theater, and I still respond to the name Holly. Hi, Holly. My friend told me a story about how, when he was 3 years old, there was only one black family in the neighborhood, the Johnsons. And whenever he saw black people in the supermarket, he would point at them and shout, "Look, it's the Johnsons." His family would be embarrassed and apologize, but he was three. Grown men and women do that every single day. They assume you're related to the other black person they know. Someone somewhere is doing it right now. When people say to me, "You know who you look like?" I'm always livid until they finish it with, "Lacey Lamar."
Aw.
They actually say I look like a young Lacey Lamar.
People tell me, "You look like what Amber Ruffin would look like if she was cute."
Shut up. Anywho, the coworker had never met this individual, but she had heard them talk about the lady Lacey is always mistaken for and how she had a bubbly and upbeat personality. She then said, "That director is black? Weird. I would have never thought that because normally black women are serious all the time." Did you feel that? In one sentence, we completely understood who this woman is. Now, we have no way of knowing this, but I believe we all just pictured the exact same woman. Let me check. Lacey, is this woman the type of person who says things like, "Mic drop, thank you for coming to my TED Talk, I'm 100% that bitch," and stuff like that, but like dead serious and years too late?
Yes.
And does she have one of those faces where it looks like one of her eyebrows is raised in disgust all the time, but it's not, that's just her face?
Yes.
Okay, that was a fun experiment. Stories about white people getting black stereotypes wrong are confusing. It's like, how did you come to that conclusion? But also, it feels refreshing not to hear the same five stereotypes over and over. I'm so conflicted. Like this one. It was Lacey's birthday, and she was just getting lulled into a false sense of security by her coworkers. It had been a while since any real racist event, and the number of high-level racists was really only down to one.